What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hey, everybody.
We are back. We are back, and we got some interesting topics to talk about. Before I get into some of our main topics, I want to talk a little bit about Candyman. The new Candyman film that released, I want to say last Friday, Breaking the Fourth Wall. Just throw that out there. I went to the movies to see it, and I had really high hopes for this film. Mm-hmm. Like, really, really high hopes. And it's a mixed bag for me. It's uh-huh. very mixed. First, I want to say, though, shout out to Naya DaCosta. I believe that's how you say her last name. She is... DaCosta? It's DaCosta. There you go. She is, I want to say, the first black woman to be, so she directed the film, and it's number one right now, like in America, number one. Mm. And I think she's the first black woman to direct a number one, like, film. Like, it's, you know, yes. Everyone's going to see it.
Yes.
And so, shout out to her. And also a shout out to her, and, you know, in terms of the things that she was trying to do with the film, a lot of the ideas that she was putting into the film, how she rebooted the franchise in a way, without erasing the first film. The first mm-hmm. film, this is a direct sequel to the first film. She changed the mythos a little bit, and it actually works a lot better. There's a lot of cool things here. Even the depiction of Candyman to how he goes about killing people, a lot of cool things. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, a lot of it doesn't work for me. And there was a really interesting article I read about that kind of broke down how we should kind of view Candyman, because there's a lot of interesting things that are happening with this film. One of the things I like about it is that it stays away from black trauma, or at the very least, it depicts it in a way that isn't triggering. Mm-hmm. There'll be things that happen with the cast, and the camera is moved to the side, or, you know, it's you just kind of hear things that are happening. You don't see it. So there's a scene where, let's say, like, a person's getting, you know, harassed or hurt by a police officer, but you don't see it. You see everything from the view of another character. Mm-hmm. And so there's a way to speak to certain ills, societal ills, but do so in an artful way that isn't just like, you know, like trauma porn. Like, you know how Hollywood mm-hmm. is big on selling our pain, right? So
yeah.
it's the fact that they were able to do that is commendable, and they did a really good job of that. But there are things that they do, they implement, or they bring up that just kind of falls short. Mm-hmm. Some of it has to do with the way it's shot, but then some of it also has to do with the writing. I'm not going to get too deep because I know that, I'm the only one that's seen it between us. And then also, I don't want to spoil anything because I want people to kind of see it for themselves. But for me, there was a lot going on in this film. There's a lot of different ideas, gentrification and racism and, you know, the idea of, righteous justice, and how that can, the rage of black people can hurt black people and white people. Mm-hmm. And all of that is fine. All of that is great. But the way it's implemented doesn't always work in this film. There's portions of the film where people kind of just expound on what gentrification is, for instance. Mm-hmm. And it's such a dry, it's almost like someone sat you down and is like, this is what racism is. Like, it doesn't allow the audience to kind of just know, or kind of just, you know, take their knowledge of whatever and bring it to the film. It has to sit you down and tell you about these things. And in doing so, it has some really stilted dialogue. There's some really some moments that are supposed to be freaky or scary that fall flat. Mm-hmm. There are just some things that just don't work. And it also is confusing in terms of the view. Like, who is this for? Now, obviously, it's Candyman. So black people are going out in droves to see this film.
Yeah.
But we don't need to necessarily know what gentrification is. We don't need to necessarily know or be reminded to such a degree what these things are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like, you know, tiptoeing around things. Again, I don't want to spoil stuff because it's very literal, which is also can be, you know, Jordan Peele, he co-wrote, I guess, the screenplay, and then he also mm-hmm. produced the film, but he didn't direct. But he has a knack for being subtle. Even things that are overt, like in Get Out, mm-hmm. they work because of the subtlety of things around it.
Uh-huh.
There's at no point does someone sit you down and say, this is what racism is in that film.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is shown. You know, there's obvious things where like a character is speaking in such a way that you know they're talking about race, but they're using animals in place of humans. But you know what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, it's very subtle. There's a keen eye to how these things work. And in this film, not so much. And it kind of takes away. Same thing when it comes to the horror. I love how Candyman isn't seen. They use mirrors really well in this film. He isn't mm-hmm. seen like in the other Candyman where like when he appears, like everyone sees him. Like people can see him, but they have to be looking in a mirror. And because of that, it creates this eerie specter type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it loses out to the original Candyman because it feels like less of a threat.
Mm-hmm.
There are scenes that are, you know, because they cut away from the violence, they cut away from you know, him stalking someone or, you know, things like that, that you kind of are, you're at a distance, I guess. You're not being pulled into the film. And so while it's cool and it's artistically well done, it isn't scary. So we take that out. We take out is being scary. We take out the fact that it's a little on the nose in terms of these things. It doesn't move in any given direction, mm-hmm. unfortunately. There's some poignant stuff towards the end, but there's also things that are left by the wayside. There's story beats about particular characters that seem important that are just, they just don't matter at the end of the film. There's a point in the film that I really didn't like involving police officers. And what I'll say to that is the things that happen to us are so bad in and of itself that we uh-huh. don't need to embellish. There's no need.
Yeah.
It's bad mm-hmm. enough. And so because of that, it feels like it kind of pulls away from what the person is trying to say with the film. It pulls away because it's like, again, like we were saying before, the white gaze and whatnot, like where white people can be like, oh, I'm not that bad, or I'm not like that particular person. I'm not that type of racist. It's like, we don't need that. It can live on its own. You know what I'm saying? Like we don't need a whole movie about Karen to understand what Karens are. That doesn't do it. And then there's also this idea of like, and I don't know how well it was handled. I have to kind of watch it again. There's this idea of like, you know, people invoking Candyman. And you have to say his name five times and all that good stuff. Yeah, intentionally, right? And mm-hmm. while I get it, and the idea that his name is going to spread, and that's what continues the curse. For good and bad, you'll find out in the film why that's good and bad. There's also this thing where like Candyman will kill anyone, and so that kind of dilutes this idea of justice, this righteousness that comes from anger. And now you could kind of juxtapose that with like, you know, the riots that we might have, or you know, just black men being angry or black people being angry, and how that can spill out and, you know, be violent, right? Like it's not containable or controllable.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's done in a way that doesn't represent that to its fullest. There's a scene that betrays who they want Candyman to be towards mm-hmm. the end of the film. And mm-hmm. because of that, it's hard to accept. It's almost like Candyman is this dangerous thing that represents something. We need to comment on how that something can also affect black people negatively. Mm-hmm. So we insert this scene to make sure you know that he's still not to be trifled with. And it doesn't work the way I think it should, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And again, this is all vague, but I wanted to just kind of speak about it. It is. I just wanted to kind of speak about it because I wanted to talk about Candyman. I need to talk to someone. And at the same time, I don't want to ruin it. Maybe later we'll have like a spoiler cast where we can actually go into a lot of things. You know, when you know, after Tess sees it as well.
I'm not watching Candyman. I'm like, well, you can spoil Candyman at any time because I'm not going to watch it.
I feel you. I'm the horror fan on the show. That is definitely me.
Yes.
But yeah, it's there's a lot. That being said,
I'm more interested in how you felt going to the movies.
Oh, going to the movies. Well, I've been to the movies a couple times. Mm-hmm. I want to say at least 4 or 5 times since they opened things back up, because that's a favorite thing of mine. Mm-hmm. And this time was good. There was, you know, a ton of Black people. We were all spread out, mm-hmm. And, you know, masked up and everything. There were a few people who I will never understand. And I know we did it too when we were younger, but I don't understand the idea of bringing very young children to these films. I kid you not, like 6 or 7. And I was like, why? Like, why are they here?
Isn't this rated R?
100%. There was a lot of rated R-ness here, even with the cutting away from violence. It was very much rated R. But yeah, like I don't. So it was interesting. It was an interesting experience, and it was interesting to be around other people, other Black people, to kind of see. Because you could tell, even though people weren't speaking a whole lot, you could kind of tell that there were some emotional things being shown, or at least we were responding emotionally. And that's why I'm kind of torn on the film, because while I can't say it's a good film, I can't. Like, I think good might be a strong word. I still like it. Which is okay. We're allowed to like, you know, bad films.
Yeah.
But it's just, at the same time, it's disappointing because I'm like, there's so many things that I think with a slight touch here or there, or I don't know, maybe there's a director's cut similar to the Snyder cut that'll come out and it'll fix certain things. But it's just, there's a huge twist that just does not sit right with me. And yeah, there's a lot to break down. But yeah, it was interesting. And, you know, if people want to go see it, definitely go check it out. I don't listen to me in terms of not doing it, but I want to make sure that you know, make sure you have the right anticipation going in, that you're not like expecting like this grand thing. It might be grand. Some Black people have been like, this is amazing. And other Black people have been like, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. I am really in the middle, and I can see why both sides are saying what they're saying. Because there are some really good things here. And she did a great job with her first feature film.
Uh-huh.
I believe this is her first feature film. So, yeah, she did a great job. But at the same time, I think maybe there was too many people, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen type of thing. Mm-hmm. And she also makes mention, this is something that I read, where people actually spoke down to her. Like people who, like on the set, like people spoke down to her. People treated her like, you know, less than, being that she's a Black woman. There was a story she actually said where someone, what did they say? Something very disrespectful to her. Like it was like a crew member while she was waiting for an Uber or something like that. They said, you know, something to the effect of I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to say it the wrong way. But when I read it, I was like, oh no, he didn't. Like I was really like, really? Like you went through this? And so it wasn't a very good experience, and that could potentially explain certain things.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So definitely go look into that. I don't want to stay on this too long, but I did want to have a segment where I kind of talk about Candyman. beyond that, what have you been doing this week? I know that you know you're still in recovery mode, so you can't watch as much content and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Aside from that,
I actually caught up on some old stuff.
Word.
and stuff that I didn't know existed. So I can't remember when it was, if it was earlier this year, if it was last year, when they finally put the X-Men anime up on Netflix, it's on Netflix. Because I remember when I found it, I was like, did anybody know about this? And I was asking around. I was like, did anybody know about this? Anyway, so I took the time to watch that. I honestly want my time back. I had to go on the internet and find out what people were saying about it, just because this is typically what I do. If I watch something that's horrible, I need to know that I'm not alone in thinking it's horrible. And I need to find out, I need to seek out my kinfolk and find out if my kinfolk are feeling, they're my kinfolk, so we're feeling the same way. But I need to know what bothered them. And I also need to find people who liked it so I can stay away from them permanently. And yeah. X-Men the anime was garbage. Really? And it was trash. Like, if you haven't seen it, don't. Apparently, because Netflix made a deal with the anime studio to make 4 shows. So they did X-Men, which was called X-Men the anime or something like that. And then they did the Iron Man show. And then they did like 2 other ones. I can't remember what they were. But some of the reviewers were like, the X-Men one is the best. And I was like, if the X-Men one is the best, then I want nothing to do with the rest of them. I also watched Wolverine and the X-Men, the animated show.
And that was old, yeah.
It's just bad.
Oh, it's bad too?
It's bad. Like, I just find it so funny. I know we spoke about Suicide Squad last week and the week before. Like, we've been talking about Suicide Squad every chance that we've kind of gotten to just, you know, kind of go over it to talk about how director Gunn did so much better than director Ayer. Like,
right.
And how one of the, I guess, comparisons that I just want to say is, I just don't understand how, like, my favorite of the, like, Marvel franchise, and it's my favorite because it's the one that I knew best. You know, and I shouldn't even say that it's the one that I knew best, but I liked it more. It was more dramatic and it had characters that I liked. There were multiple characters. It wasn't just Spider-Man swinging around and chasing the Hobgoblin everywhere. Like, it was multiple people in their own dramatic lives, in their own love triangles, and their own, you know, problems with whatever it was that they were dealing with. Accepting who they were, helping other people. Like, I really dug X-Men, and come on, it has the best opening music of like any cartoon.
Yeah, ever. Just about, yep.
And it was in stereo. Like, come on, y'all. But I just don't understand why, in my opinion, the best or like my favorite Marvel installment, for real, just can't have good TV or good movies. Like, why is it like this? It just doesn't make it. It's so hard for me to accept and understand. I mean, they did so well with the MCU and they had a plan and I get it. And if Iron Man didn't work, it was never going to work. Right. Iron Man worked so well and they were able to start from there and keep moving forward. And it did well. Even they had movies that were not good. Like, Thor was a bad movie. I will die on that hill. It was a bad movie. It was stupid.
I like the second one much better.
Exactly. The second one was much better. And I know a lot of people didn't like the third one because they're just like, so Thor's comedy now. I didn't watch the second one. Okay. I watched the Cliff Note version because I just never got a chance to watch the second one. I really did. It just wasn't available when I wanted to see it. And I was trying to get through movies. But you know how I love Ragnarok because it's just stupid and funny. It's stupid. And sorry. Look, what's her face is in that movie, and I'm not even Tessa Thompson. You know I love Tessa Thompson. What's her face? Kate. What's her face? Like, she.
Oh yeah.
She played Hela so well. Like, I had so much fun with that movie. That movie was fun to me. It was a lot of fun, and I know that was their intention behind the movie. They wanted it to be fun. They wanted Hulk to go smash.
Right.
And And I think it delivered on what it was supposed to do. And Loki. Yeah. So, Loki got to be Loki. So, that we're going off track. But my point is that X-Men has failed every opportunity it's gotten. And it's not...
That's some good films in there.
Yeah. There are some good films in there, but see, you hear what you hear what you just said?
Okay? Yeah.
There's some good ones.
Yeah.
Like, as a whole, it's like, how do you murder one of your best franchises? You cannot go wrong. I'm going to do my little X-Men altar prayer, and then we can move on. But, like, you have the goddess of weather, okay, who is so amazing. You have Storm, who, again, has one of the coolest nicknames. Come on. Hey, my name's Storm. Oh, really? And your hair is white? Wait a minute. Are you going to zap me with thunder? I am. Like, you have Storm, okay? And if you watch X-Men the anime, Storm is so mistreated. Like, I don't know how you have a level 5. Storm's level 5 mutant, right? Level 5, not level 4?
I believe she's Omega level.
Omega level. See, you have a freaking Omega level mutant running around here. Okay. And she basically, the entire time, the entire show, I think it's 12 episodes, she does nothing. She gets injured, like the first episode or something. Or no, the first episode, she freezes a boat of pirates, which is the coolest thing she does the entire series. The rest of it, she gets injured one episode right in the beginning, and Cyclops' bitch ass literally says to her, Storm, don't do it. Don't use your powers. You're not recovered from the last fight. Bitch, she's stronger than you. Cyclops, you shoot a really, really, really loud and powerful solar flare from your eyes, and you do backflips. That's what you do. Your real powers is that you're a leader. You're a natural leader. Okay? That's what you're supposed to do. That you fit the mold. You're the quarterback. Okay? That he fits the mold of that. This chick can do anything. She can control molecules in the air. Do you understand that she could turn your sweat into icicles if she wanted to?
Yeah, Storm's a beast.
She's a beast. And they, I don't know who, I should have written this stuff down, but everyone who is responsible for the X-Men anime needs a break from working, because it was just wrong on all levels. Storm's characterization was a travesty. She apparently got hurt in the same fight that anybody else who was fighting in, like, should have gotten the same injury or whatever. And then all of a sudden she's the one who's told she can't use her powers. And then she doesn't do anything except make it snow at one point for fun to make somebody else feel better. And then uses lightning the entire time. The rest of the time she just uses lightning. And again, I can understand if she's Omega level, you can't have her winning every fight. But to just put her to the side, she's part of the team. What I don't understand is why was she even included in the show if you weren't going to allow her to be great? That's just what I didn't understand.
So now I have to watch it.
Yeah, because it's stupid. But I mean, like, I also am the type of person, I have really high expectations for my anime. Like, I can watch a stupid anime because I know it's stupid, but I have high expectations if it's supposed to be serious, and I have high expectations if it's X-Men. I've been disappointed by every installment of X-Men outside of X-Men, the original series, the animated series, and it's still number one for me. So the point is, I watched X-Men, the anime, it was garbage, and I also watched Wolverine and the X-Men, that was also stupid. They were just stupid. They were just stupid. And at the end of the day, I was like, oh yeah, these are for kids. But when we were kids and we were watching X-Men, the animation, like, it was captivating. And then I watched it again as, like, I've watched it through completely, because I remember they put it on Hulu a few years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And I've watched all the way through and I was like, this show still hits. Like, yes, there are cartoony things that happen that don't make sense. And then there are some things that it's kind of just like, okay, you know, this might be a kid's show. But you remember when we were kids, a lot of the things that they made for kids kind of seemed like they were for adults too.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of that. There's plenty of that.
So when every time I see a new X-Men animated series or something, I'm sitting here like, okay, you know, I might be 9,000 years old, but I can watch this. And I literally watch this and I'm like, yeah, this is for a 5-year-old. This is not. This has
But even then, like, there's not like to say, because there are some shows that are for younger audiences that aren't written necessarily, because there's the idea of like, you wrote something that will appeal to younger audiences, so you don't deal with a lot of, like real themes for the most part.
Yeah.
Maybe outside of like sharing and stuff like that. And then there's writing where you almost insult the audience. Like you almost because essentially, like you said, they were written, either they were written for older kids or they were written so that parents can watch with them. So there was cartoony things, but then there was themes, you know, and how X-Men, you know, essentially deals with race.
Racism.
It's all in there, you know what I'm saying? And so they were able to make something that kind of stands the test of time. And so, yeah, it's rather rough. It's rather rough. I think I kind of want to see it just to see what you're saying with the anime. But I didn't hear anything good about it, to be honest.
I didn't even say anything good. I mean, like, if there were any good things, there's no good things. There's honestly no good things. And because, for real, it's annoying. Like, again, this is the last time they animated something. This is the last time something's been animated for X-Men. Or maybe I shouldn't say the last time, but this was 2011. And I think. And you've had decades, okay? It looks good. It looks good. You know, Madhouse did it.
Oh, nice.
So it looks good. And the opening, like the opening of the show and the ending credits, oh my God, that still animation is great. It's really good. Those still pictures are very well drawn. It's exactly what you would want to see if you want to see a really good anime. But the story does not hit. It's annoying. It's bad. It's just, it takes way too long to even get there. I'm like, you know, and then they, of course, they got to bring Emma in. So, you know, Storm can't wear white because Emma's there. So, because you can't have them both running around in white. You might forget who's who.
I'm mad at that.
Just saying. but no, the story. And you know what? Remember when we talked about Madhouse before, when we were saying like with some of the animes, like you'll watch it. And then there'll be like these, the action's really good, right? But then just when they're doing normal stuff, like talking or transitioning from scene to scene, it'll be horrible.
Yeah, the frame rate will drop like significantly.
And stuff doesn't make sense. It's just like, why is the camera on the floor when there's nothing on the floor? Like, you know, I can understand if you're panning to the sky because you're exiting a scene and the episode is ending, but it's like, why is the camera stuck on the mirror when there's no there's no foreshadowing, there's no Candyman showing up in the camera, like in the mirror, like none of that's happening. And I'm just like, there's all these little scenes that where that happens. And I'm just like, I'm so glad that I have a vision problem right now and I can't really pay that much attention because I'm going to do other stuff because I don't need to watch the TV to know what's happening. It's 20 minutes of nonsense. Really, there's only 5 minutes worth of content in a 20 minute episode.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, and this, which is sad because it's not like all of their content is that way. Like the stuff that they did with One Punch Man is actually decent all the way through.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's like, you know, we didn't, you know, allocate enough people to kind of make this grand or what, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, maybe there was some transitioning, you know, they had to move people to other projects because they handle multiple things at a time. But yeah, there'll be times where I'm like, oh, that's not normal. That's not your normal quality, if you will. And obviously certain things you know, will kind of dictate your quality. Like, they're not going to, you know, Vampire Hunter D is going to look better than freaking Beyblade. It just is. Like, there's no,
you know, no,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's no comparison there, because one of them is for an older audience, so they want it to look better. But when you're kind of like in this middle range, it's like, I mean, you know, it'll work sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, moving on from there, we also want to talk about Ed Asner, who recently passed away. For those who don't know, he was an American actor and president of the Screen Actors Guild. He I first saw him personally in the Mary Tyler Moore Show. For those of you who know, I'm like big TV head guy. So I liked the Dick Van Dyke Show. Then Mary Tyler Moore, who was on that show, got her own show. And then that she had a spinoff, two spinoff series from that, the Rhoda Show, which I think he was on as well. And then the Lou Grant Show, which he actually starred in. He was Lou Grant on Mary Tyler Moore, and he had that show. So that's kind of where I know him from. But he was doing work, I want to say, way before that. 1970s, I believe.
Even in the 60s.
He did, you know, some Broadway stuff. But so, like, moving forward in time, depending on how old you are, you might have seen in other, you know, other places. He was in The Untouchables, in four episodes of The Untouchables. He actually did a ton of voice work.
Yeah.
Some of which I didn't know. Like, he did Cosgrove for Freakazoid. I did not know that. That is freaking cool. I mean, you could kind of hear his voice. Like, the way he sounds, it's like, oh, I know who that person is. He also played a character in The Boondocks. It was the episode where what was the restaurant they made where, like, you would eat?
Yeah, the itis.
The itis episode. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
He was Wonkler.
Yes. Actually, he was in The Boondocks a couple episodes. So, like, he's done a lot of voice work, behind the scene work. He was in Batman, the animated series, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He was Hudson in Gargoyles, which I knew but didn't know. You know how, like, you...
you know. I mean, we were kids back then, so it doesn't matter.
Right. But it's like, kind of like me being a horror fan, like knowing that Johnny Depp is in Nightmare on Elm Street, but not realizing that that's Johnny Depp until I later realized that that's Johnny Depp. It's kind of like that. But yeah, he was in... you know, he appeared in The Outer Limits, The Fugitive, Gunsmoke, Mission Impossible. Like, he has worked all over the place. And
he was in Up.
Yeah, he was in Up. That's something you guys would know.
And
Up,
everybody the Pixar should know movie. That he was in Up, yeah.
Amazing job. And he's always been pretty great in his acting and you know, voice acting and whatnot. He's won, I want to say... He's one of the people that's known for his Emmy Awards. Like, I want to say he's won 6 or 7. Like, he's won more than a lot of other people, like across the board, you know, for his television appearances and stuff like that. Like, he's done amazing stuff. And so it was sad, you know, to hear that he had passed. I'm happy that, or at the very least, I don't know what, you know, they said it was based on natural causes. So I don't know if it was... You know, your first thought is COVID related, because that's been the thing, right? And so I was kind of fearful of that. Like, I was like, dang, not the COVID. Like, and not to say that his passing is better that way, but the last thing you want is someone to be, you know, miserable and super sick, you know, before they pass. And it's never a good thing, but it's like, you know, if they're around family and they kind of go in their sleep, you know, you try to think of, like, the most positive, I don't know, ways that someone can pass versus a very, you know, horrendous experience. And so I was hoping that it wasn't COVID, or he didn't, you know, like, have cancer or something like that, but they just said it was just, you know, just natural causes.
He's 91 years old, so which is young, by the way, just letting y'all know, 91 is the new 70. So, I mean,
so, yeah, he's also done, you know, a little bit of activism. And he's, you know, you should definitely go check him out. Cause he's been in something you've seen. Like, you've heard him in something you've seen. Like, he's been in Captain Planet, for crying out loud. Like, there's something you've seen him in or heard him in, heard his voice in, and, you know, he brought something cool to the role. So it's definitely, yeah, definitely going to be missed. You know, and I know he wasn't, yeah, he wasn't working. I want to say he stopped. When did he stop? Around, I want to say 2017, I think he stopped. I can't remember.
Probably a good idea.
I can't remember, yeah, but like, that's kind of like when he was like, you know, okay, I'm putting the mic down kind of thing.
Yeah, let me take a break.
Take a break. But, you know, prayers out to his family. And yeah, like I said, we just kind of wanted to say something about it because he's big. He was big in, you know, the TV world, TV and film, actually. So,
and film, yeah. He's definitely a big part. If you don't know him, your parents did, so.
Right. Like, he's been in so much. He's been in so much. So, the next thing we wanted to talk about is an interesting one. It's an interesting topic. Steam's 2-hour refund policy. Now, let me paint the scene. For the people who don't know, Steam has a policy where if you buy a game and you play it less than 2 hours and you have it less than a week, you can refund the game. They have some measures in place where, you know, so people can't abuse the system per se. You know, you can't buy, return, and keep doing that over and over and over and over and over. You kind of need to, you know, be mindful about what you're purchasing. That said, you can issue a refund for a game that you've only played, you know, you've played for less than 2 hours. And unfortunately, because of that, developers who have made short games have been kind of hit with, you know, there's a bit of a conundrum because they, their games are shorter than 2 hours. And so people will play them. They'll enjoy them. They'll review them well, but then they'll go back and actually ask for a refund. And so recently a developer, the developer behind Summer of 58, I believe it's a survival horror game, actually stated that they're no longer going to be making games. Amica Games said that, you know, they're going to be leaving the industry for an indefinite time because there was just too many returns on their game. And so, you know, initially you hear that and you're like, oh, was the game bad? Was it buggy? Was it whatever? Come to find out, it wasn't like any of those things. It wasn't poorly received. It got a very positive rating with over 280 something reviews on Steam. So it wasn't bad and it wasn't expensive. It was like, what, $6 or something like that? Like it wasn't very expensive at all. And, you know, it was meant to be a short experience. You kind of, you know, you play it, especially streamers, right? Like they like to scare themselves for their audience. You buy the game, you play it, you scare yourself and blah, blah, blah. You move on from there. But unfortunately, because so many people returned it, they lost money. They didn't gain any money. And it's rough. And so I feel for them. I think that's sad and just mad disrespectful that you can enjoy something and return it like that, knowing that there's no money. Cause, you know, Steam, if they do make a purchase, because this is how it breaks down. If you make a purchase of a game, Steam actually gets 30% off top, you know, but then they're only getting a little bit of the portion anyways, but then if you refund it all, like Steam's like, well, you know, there's nothing I can give you because nobody wants to play your game or they keep refunding it and they get nothing. So all that work that went into it, they get nothing. I would hope that they would try to port the game to another, like maybe to a console, maybe to the Switch or to the Xbox or something like that, where things are a little bit more stringent in terms of what you can and can't refund. But that effort, that you know, porting it over, that actually takes effort. They have to convert files and I can't speak to what goes into development, but there's a lot of work involved porting it over. And not even that, there's money involved, because in order to get everything certified to work on consoles, a lot of times there's money involved with going through that process. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it looks grim. So yeah. I have a beef with that. Not just because, you know, this particular person is having a problem, you know, is having trouble, but also because this idea that we should just be able to return whatever we want to return. That doesn't really work. There's some stores that do that. There's some media, mm-hmm. there's some, you know, products that you could just return regardless. Like, I think Walmart will let you return anything. I think freaking
really?
Zappos.
You know that? I need to start shopping there some more.
I mean, I've seen, because what happens, they try to resell it. I've seen, for instance, my dad, and this is a long time ago, but my dad, we bought a computer from Walmart, and this is when that was like an okay thing to do. You don't really want to buy a computer from Walmart right now, but let's say you did.
We
bought one, and it was kind of busted and whatnot, and it didn't work. We took it back, and we got something else. Before we could actually leave the store, they were putting the one we had just returned back on the shelf. So, yeah, granted, they marked the price down and all that good stuff. They were still selling something that didn't work. You know what I mean? And so there are some places where you can do that. I know Zappos does that with sneakers. If you buy them and you wear them and they're not too worn or too whatever, you can actually return them. Mm-hmm. You can return them. But that is a little bit different. Because
yeah, it's different.
Shoes, you know, maybe you got the wrong size. Maybe they're bad for your back. You know what I'm saying? Like there's different reasons why you would kind of return that sort of thing. But when it comes to art, when it comes to film, you know, television shows, when it comes to video games,
mm-hmm.
just returning it because you don't like it, I have a problem with that.
There is no
balance in terms of quality there. The deal is, you pay me something, I give you something. Now, if you like what I gave you, then maybe you'll return and continue to purchase things from me. But there's no guarantee that you're going to like it. It's subjective. And
yeah.
Because of that, there are things in place to kind of keep you that way. Like, for instance, when it comes to going to the movies, if you could return every ticket like that you buy, why would you ever? I would have one ticket. I mean, I wouldn't do that because that sucks, but I would have, you know, theoretically, I would have one ticket because I would just keep refunding, getting refunds and watching everything I could. Like, mm-hmm. once you've watched it, once you've played it, that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you've experienced it and that's what you're paying for. Mm-hmm. You're paying for, you know, the ability to interact with this, whatever. And so, yeah, I think that's really messed up. The idea comes from, initially, it was in a good place. Initially, it was like, these are digital items that you can't return regardless. And so mm-hmm. having this in place, you know, like say, like, especially on PC, like say you bought something and it doesn't run on your computer. Your computer's too old mm-hmm. or maybe too new. You know, if you go to Good Old Games and buy a really old game, something that used to run on DOS, it's possible that it won't run on your newer computer. So right. I get those reasons to return something where you're playing it, but you're not playing it. Like, you're playing and you're troubleshooting and things are not working out. So, yeah, the two-hour limit works there because you're not really mm-hmm. trying to beat it. You're just trying to get it to work. Mm-hmm. But if we go off of just whether I like it or not, who's to say I don't like it? Because mm-hmm. I could be lying. I mean, this game, you know, is very positive. People are saying that it's great, but they're all returning the game.
So, you know what I'm saying? What? I'm less mad at the people returning it because they found a loophole to save their own money than I am with the people who created this policy for them to do it in the first place. And there's a reason for that, because I've worked in retail for so long, but it's like, you know, people are going to do this. And I'm not saying to treat everybody, you know, treat all your customers like they're criminals, but what made them think that this broad policy was going to work. This is an indie developer or?
Yeah, it's indie.
This is stupid. This is almost like we didn't know the industry very well. And so we did this really cool thing that we thought would be really great and it backfired and now we're bankrupt. Like, no shit. I'm sorry. Like, that's where I am. Because I'm sitting here like,
if you, like you were saying, you know, maybe the systems didn't work. Maybe the person's computer system doesn't work. Maybe their gaming system isn't compatible. You know, we want to give these people a way to return the media so they can get their money back because they weren't able to play it. That's fine.
Right.
Especially if you can verify that. Because, like, for example, remember when I bought the Adobe suite for my computer because I wanted to be able to, I actually wanted to do the editing of our podcast
right.
on my computer? And my computer runs on Windows 7. And yeah. the Adobe suite does not work on Windows 7. So I had to contact support, tell them the whole thing. I don't even remember if I had to verify it or not. I can't remember. If I did, because it happened, this was a year ago, and I have brain damage and can't remember things. So I don't even remember if I ate today. But I am pretty sure that, you know, I had to tell them. Well, it did take a while. I think there were a few emails that went back and forth. But I had to tell them, look, I just paid all this money for the Adobe suite. I need to get my money back because I can't use the product. I didn't use the product at all. Like, I understand this is digital, but I need my money back because I cannot use it. I cannot install this product. It took a while, but I was able to get my money back. But why would this company make some sort of return policy in which people who clearly have played the game can give it back and not verify any reason and not make the stipulations very clear?
Right.
Like that's literally setting yourself up for failure. And that's not fair to the developers because like it's not fair to anybody who worked on these games. And it's just stupid. It's bad business. Who told you this business model would work? These are not shoes. This is digital media.
Yeah. I you know what? It's interesting because, and then that's where the conundrum comes in a little bit too, because gamers are, you know, they want this sort of thing. And I'm like, well, we can't give everybody what they want. I'm sorry.
Oh.
It doesn't work that way because we see that even though it wasn't meant to be abused in this fashion, that people will get over. Like it's people in a nutshell. I mean,
yeah.
You could just look outside and you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just how people are. And so, yeah, at the very least, have some type of security thing or some type of a clause in place. I do not, because that's the thing. There's a group of people who are like, this is okay. Like, we'll just do this or whatever, and we don't really care if the indie developer doesn't make any money. Then there's people who don't like this, but they feel like it's okay to just return something you don't like, video game-wise. And I'm like, this is not a rental service.
No.
You know, it you know, you can't do that. You really can't. I think I've returned things before on Steam, but I've never done it because I didn't like a game. I have a bunch of games in my Steam library that I do not ever intend on touching because I do not like them. Whether they were something I was reviewing for a website or something I purchased that I thought looked cool, but it was not cool at all. Did not return it because I made that purchase. I could have read reviews. I could have watched videos. And sometimes you just make a bad purchase, you know? But because it's digital and not physical, I can't like go back and sell it. You know what I mean? I can't take my, like, I have this DVD. I don't like it. Here, you want to buy it? Boom. You know, I think that would probably be a little bit better of an option. Like, if Steam doesn't allow you to refund it, allow for a trading. Like, you can trade this game and get credit or something, or trade it with another player who has a different game. And so that way you guys aren't, you know, Steam doesn't necessarily lose money, but then the developer still keeps what they initially got from you. I'm totally down with that. But just refunding it because I just didn't like it. Fam, at any point in time, you can say you don't like your favorite game just to get the money back. Stop it.
Yeah.
This is outside of, you know, bugs, things not running properly. There's just you liking it, that's a whole nother ball game.
Right.
And we see it happening. There's another game actually I played what was it, Before Your Eyes, I think it's called Before Your Eyes, and it's a very short game. I want to say you can beat it in maybe an hour, a little bit more, depending. But it's all about blinking. Essentially, you live through someone's life in moments. So like you, if you blink, the game speeds up. It could be an hour. It could be like years. And that, you know, your camera, you know, looks at you and, you know, so it could pick up your blinking. So every time you blink, you move forward in time. And so you're living through this person's life, you know, these little brief moments at a time. And it's really interesting, really cool, cool game. But it's short. It's mad short. And the idea that they're not asking for a ton of money. That's also what's really, you know, pissing me off. It's just, it wasn't a ton of money. And not to say that everyone has disposable income to buy video games, but if you can buy video games, being that it's an expensive media, you know, you can, come on, son, like games are like $70. You can, if this is like $5, $10, you can not refund it. Come on.
Yeah. That's why I don't understand why the policy was even allowed, like why they were allowed this. It just doesn't make sense. If it's such a small cost, like this shouldn't even be included in the able to return. This is one of the purchases that you just eat.
Well, see, and that's the thing. It was implemented wide, like because they're thinking about like if you play a game that's like 60 hours long, this huge Final Fantasy game or whatever the case may be, and you return that under 2 hours, it's like, okay, there's no way you saw everything in this game within 2 hours because they're so long. But they didn't think to make any type of clauses for shorter games, and that's how a lot of these companies work. You know, it's
so Steam YouTube made the policy, but the developers who put their games on Steam just have to go with it.
Correct. It's Steam's, because Steam is the store, the online store that houses these games. Yeah. And the developer, and granted, it's not, to be fair, it's not a lot of, there's competition, but not like Steam. Like, no. Steam is, everybody knows Steam, Steam's right?
Huge. Everybody, I have Steam on my computer.
Right, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's not, the developer themselves didn't agree to this mess. It's a side effect of Steam, you know, enacting a policy widespread.
So and there's this no is, one. This oh, is what bothers me, because of any other retail industry, any other place, any other type of storefront that deals with something like this, the developer is supposed to still get their money. So what I'm saying, what's bothering me is that the developer is saying per the article or whatever that they have to go out of business because they didn't make any money off of this game that they put all this effort into. The problem here is that this was Steam's policy. So Steam should be biting the cost, not the developer. Steam should be eating that because that's their policy. It's like me deciding to have a store and I decide to give 20% off of all Nikes or something.
Right.
I bought these things from at cost from wherever I bought them. Nike's not getting the 20%. They're not eating that 20%. They already got their money from me. I'm the retailer. So if Steam wants to act as a retailer, then why are they making the developers eat the cost unless they managed to get the developer to agree to it. And the developer, being an indie, agreed to it because they just wanted their game out there. And the developer got screwed in this transaction.
Definitely, definitely screwed. And that's the thing, because everything is digital, you know, the world doesn't catch up to these things fast enough, you know, where laws and things like that. So a lot of times it's not even a cost in that sense where Steam is necessarily paying for these games to be over here. It's more like, we have the platform, submit your game. You have to pay a cost because they enacted this years ago because people were just uploading trash to kind of get money from people. So you have to pay money to get your game on Steam. And then the only way that Steam makes money from there is if your game sells. So I do understand that. Unfortunately, or not unfortunately, I should say, I do agree with you though, that if it's not under certain parameters, that Steam should eat the cost. If people are returning the game because they don't like it versus the game being buggy, the game being broken, it not running on your computer, those things, it's like on the developer. Okay, you didn't, you know, you got to bug proof your game. That's just how it is. But on the flip side, if they didn't like it, and you and Steam goes and looks at your reviews and they're like 99% positive, but 98% of people have returned the game, there is something wrong there. Like, you have to step in and go, all right, what can we do to fix this?
Yeah.
Or at the very least, going forward, actually enact something that will prevent this from happening. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Lower the time. Because honestly, I don't think, and this is just me, I don't think you need hours upon hours to decide whether you like a game. So if we're going to make it like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't, mm-hmm. it does not take that long. Even if a game magically changes after the first 2 hours and it gets, mm-hmm. you know, the world opens up and I was like, no, the basic bare bones of this game.
Yeah.
That's the part where you need to tell me whether you like it or not. Yeah. If you're going to make it like that. Exactly. Shorten it down then. Heck, you know, make it under an hour.
Isn't that cool typically that. Why there are game demos? Like,
right. Like,
there's so many ways for this to not happen. And I mean, even this coming from me, somebody who doesn't play games as much as I, you know, wish I did. But like, I have gotten free demos of games, you know, through the Xbox store. I have, you know, back in the day when we actually used to go to the store and get games, you know, back in 9,000 years ago. But remember when you used to be able to go to Montgomery Ward and JCPenney and the game systems were in the store?
Yeah.
And you could play them in the store and stuff. Like, there was typically, you typically knew. I mean, mind you, those were bigger games. So let's not be unfair to smaller indie developers because, you know, they weren't going to be the ones that were on the TV in the stores. You're not going to walk by GameStop and it's this little indie game that's going to be being played on the system through the glass, you know, windows. But like, I have bought a game, a physical game before where I try to return it. Like years ago, I bought SSX 3 on Xbox because I had gotten my Xbox and I used to play SSX all the time on PlayStation. But now I didn't have a PlayStation. I had bought my own Xbox. The PlayStation was my brother's that I used to play. And then I played it when I was in school on my friend's Xbox. So when I bought it for myself When I bought it for myself on Xbox, I didn't realize that I was going to have such a hard time playing it because the controller is different. And all of the controls are 100% different. Like, couldn't do Flying Squirrel just by using the back triggers anymore. And that wasn't going to work for me. Like, this is one of my favorite games. You can't change all of the way it plays.
Right.
I didn't know the trick book at all. Like, I was pressing the what's it called button for tweaking, like B, as if it was like the square or something for tweak. Nothing was working. I was like, I hate this game. I took it back either the same day or a day later. I can't remember. And they were like, yeah, you can't give that back to us. And I'm like, and I used to always open my games so that like my games and my movies, so like you couldn't tell that I'd open them. Some person, and I never, honestly, I was never really trying to run game on anybody, but somebody taught me how to open them that way. And so I just always did it. And so I took it back and I told them, like, I didn't lie about it. I was like, I played this game, but I cannot play it. I was like, I need to return it. I'm just going to buy it for Xbox. I'm buy it for PlayStation. And I was like, because I'm getting a PlayStation next week. And the guy was like, which I did get a PlayStation, by the way, and PS2. And the guy was like, sorry, we can't take it back. And he told me why I could. And I'm like, seriously? But this is how much I paid for it. And it's brand, it's like, it's new. It really is new. And he's like, yeah, but you played it. So you can't return it. And he's like, you can sell it back to us as a used game, but we'll only give you like a couple dollars for it, or something like that. And I was like, oh, hell no. And I was so angry because I spent so much money on this game, you know, and I couldn't play it. And so I was so upset because I'm like, there's got to be some way. And it wasn't brand new at the time. You know how a lot of those games that they have, they turn them into classics.
Yeah.
So it gets cheaper. So that's when I bought it. So it may have been like 20 at the time or something like that. And that's a lot of money to me back in like 2005 or 4 or whatever. So, but I couldn't get my money back because they wouldn't give it to me. So I just had to live with it. I ended up selling it a few years ago on what's it called? So what's that websites
you can eBay? Sell your stuff
on? Yeah, like eBay or something. I got like $17 for it. Somebody really they wanted it for $17.
Nice.
I was like, okay, sure. I thought it was great, and they paid for shipping too. And I mean, like, I mean, hey, the game is basically brand new. It was played once. Okay. But my point is, like, I physically had a game in a real reason as to why I wanted to return it. And, you know, they wouldn't do it. I know that they do it sometimes. Like, you just, the person at the register has to like you in those stores. Like, I'm pretty sure under a different circumstance, it could have happened. But it just really, really gets me how they made this blanket policy and didn't take into account. I understand it seems huge, but didn't take into account that they've got digital media that can be played through in under 2 hours, which would, like, come on. Just no.
And that's the thing. It's. Because I get it. You know, you in your instance with taking it to the store, it was mostly mm-hmm. because you couldn't play. You know, there's arguments where, you know, you could eventually learn, but, you know, them not being able to sell it at full price anymore because it's used, stuff like that. I totally understand. I used to work at GameStop mm-hmm. and it's just something we could not do. At the same time, when you compare the two, when you compare the two things, it's similar. Because mm-hmm. if the only thing that's different is this is digital, because uh-huh. even with in your case, you actually were in a better position because you could actually resell the thing that you bought.
Right.
Whereas a person who has digital can't. So you totally get, I get why gamers are like, we should be able to just refund it, whatever, just whatever. But the problem is that you cannot, there's no balance there. At the very least, someone getting a game, a physical game, can do other things with that physical property. So a hard no works. With a digital game, a hard no is less of a sell because you can't resell it. And that being said, I think that you should be given the opportunity to trade it, to be able to trade it through Steam. And I know that's a big deal because Steam is...
And you have to use their licenses.
Right. And you have to make systems and all this other stuff. Like they have to build that in. That's not something you just click a button mm-hmm. and it works. Right. But at the same time, if you make this a broad thing nowadays with no type of nuance, mm-hmm. you're going to have more of these stories. You just are. You're going to have more of these stories where developers aren't able to do, or they're going to pad the experience, which I hate, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. make their games long artificially just so they can get over the hump, just so they can make sure that you're playing at least 2 hours, you know, so that you don't try to trade it in, or, you know, not trade it in, but, you know, try to sell the game back.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate. And that's what I'm like, that's where, you know, because people we'll make these comparisons with you know, having a physical versus digital. I'm like, it needs to be along the same lines. If we're going to do a whole digital future, there are some things from retail that we need to keep. Like, I need to, if I buy something, I need to own it. Don't just give me a license for a limited time. No, I need to own it fully, and I should be able to do whatever I want with the files. I just, outside of recreating more of it, because that's against the law. But I should be able to sell it. Sell the license even. If you're going to have me pay full price, because then what's the point? At the same time, if we're going to do that, also make it so that people are protected when they make things, when they make mm-hmm. these digital products, this digital art for you, make it so they're protected. You know, don't just, and to be fair, I haven't spoken with anybody over at Valve. I don't know if they're actually looking into it. I know this is something that's been on gaming sites recently, and, you know, I'm sure the word has gotten back to them, but I don't know what they're doing to implement any type of change. I know right now it's still the same. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's some trash.
Really, really.
They really do need to do something. I mean, I know in digital media, like books and stuff, again, you were already talking about platforming, which is harder because, you know, people have different types of computers running on different systems. So that's different. But like if you have an e-reader, depending on, like, of course, the other person has to have the same e-reader. But like if I have a Nook, I can share a book with you that I bought. If I don't like the book, you know, I can't return it. But which is also why a lot of ebooks are cheaper. I mean, there's, I don't want to say they are in fact cheaper because they're not always cheaper. Sometimes you can get books, printed books, for cheaper than ebooks, but ebooks normally have a very similar price range.
Right.
And $9.99 and $15.99 are very common price ranges, especially the $9.99 area for ebooks. So there's a reason for that, because it's yours and you can't return it. If you didn't like the book, you can't return it. But it's also the same thing if you buy a book. If you buy a book and you read it and you didn't like the book, you can't just go back to Barnes & Noble and say, I didn't like it.
Right.
They'll be like, ma'am, you opened it. The spine is bent. The pages are bent. You put highlighter marks in here, highlighting the pages you didn't like. You dog-eared them. Like, I'm sorry, I can't give you money back, but I didn't like the book. But I can't give you your money back because you already absorbed the content. You paid for the content. You didn't pay for liking it or not. You paid for the content.
You're taking a risk.
Yeah. You're taking a risk. It's kind of like going on a roller coaster and realizing after you got off that you didn't want to do it. Ma'am, I can't put you on the roller coaster in reverse as if you're going to get your experience back. That'll just give you another bad experience and you'll probably feel even more worse. You don't get your tickets back.
Yeah, the throw up already left your body. I can't do anything with that. I'm sorry.
Nothing. So like saying with e-reader, like if we both have a Nook and I didn't like the book, I know I can lend it to you. I can lend it to you. You can lend it to friends. Yeah. One person at a time, and then they have 2 weeks to, you know, it's kind of like you're a library,
right?
And you have 2 weeks, and then, you know, if they don't finish it within 2 weeks, it automatically leaves their system and it goes to yours. It just goes back to your library because you can't read it while they have it. And I do remember with Xbox that, like, if somebody else signs into your Xbox, that you can have access to their uploaded media.
Yeah, Steam's like that too. If you can share it via like a friend type thing. Uh-huh. And so if I buy a game and you log on and we share it like family, as long as I'm not playing it, you can play it.
Okay.
At the moment I start playing, it kicks you off.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad that at least that's there, but they clearly didn't put that they didn't take that into effect with this situation. They just made a really, really dumb mistake. And some small developers are paying the price for it. And they need to fix that ASAP, because it was that if I were the indie, I would be looking through all of my paperwork and every contract I sign, and I would be figuring out a way.
Yeah. It's, and then it's the fact that you could do certain things like that kind of makes me feel like you could potentially trade a game. You know, the fact that you could, people are given licenses that are like temporary license through the e-reader and through Steam and Xbox. Like you said, like if someone logs in, if I sign in with my account on your Xbox, as long as I'm signed in over there, we can play a game. Yep. I feel like it's getting to the point where we can actually start moving this digital media around a little bit better, you know? So I don't know. Hopefully Valve figure it out. You know what I'm saying? 'Cause you're hurting indie is the indie scene is breathing life into gaming in a way that the majors aren't right now. And so you kind of got to, you know, keep these guys in the loop. Keep them, you know, keep them in the game.
I feel like no I pun should intended. Just go buy the game just to help them out.
Well, I know a lot of people are trying. I don't know how effective it's been. I know there were, you know, people were like, you know, I'm going to go buy it just because. We'll see. We'll see. Hopefully this isn't the last we hear of Amica Games. Hopefully they're able to make something new. You know, maybe they'll get something on console where things are a little bit more strict. I'm not sure. You know, I will definitely, you know, kind of keep an eye out on the studio and, you know, if they return. But Yeah, man. Well, that is our show for tonight.
That's it.
Thank you guys for hanging out with us and listening to us ramble a little bit about all the different content and themes and such that we talked about tonight. Mm-hmm. If you're listening on YouTube, feel free to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content. If you're listening on Amazon or Spotify, Google Podcasts, feel free to subscribe, add us to your RSS feeds, whatever you need to do so you're up on all the content. Actually, if you go check us out at Audio Boom, that search for The Game Cast, it has all the links there. So all the places that you might want to... not all the places, but most of the places that you might listen to a podcast, they're there. So mm-hmm. whichever one that you fancy, go ahead and click on that and it'll shoot you on over and you can listen to all 65 episodes. This being the 65th one. You can listen to all the episodes. I recommend the later ones because we've gotten better at this, but yeah, definitely check that out. We have some new stuff coming, a lot of content, whether it's, Marvel's What If series, various films. I'm actually going to see Shang-Chi tomorrow. I'm going to see that tomorrow in a theater. So I will be talking about that as well.
Probably next week.
So yeah, again, thank you for hanging out with us. Let us know what you want us to talk about. You can follow us on The Gamecast 1 on Twitter and message us about, different content. I know Netflix is throwing up so much stuff. There's so many things in my queue that I have not watched because it's just overwhelming. I really think Netflix should sponsor us because then I would watch more. I really would.
I don't see why they can't or shouldn't.
Right. It just makes sense. But yeah, again, thanks for hanging out with us. And that's it for me.
Yeah, that's it. Just like Kenny said, go see Shang-Chi. It comes out tonight.
Yeah.
I'm not going to the theater because I don't do crowded places anymore. And I don't really leave my home unless it's to go to the doctor or the grocery store, which I'm also no longer allowed to do anymore. So, but yeah, if you support, go see the movie because I think it's going to be really good. But just wear your mask, please.
Yes.
Wash your hands. Please get your vaccines because I'm sorry, man. I'm losing sympathy for y'all. Next week, we're going to talk about how Candace Owens got owned.
Fam. That is a really good topic. I'm not going to speak on it right now because we're getting ready to close, but there's so many things I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That'll happen next week. We'll talk about that because there'll be more stuff out there. But yeah, just like I tell you guys every week, just stay safe. Don't get angry and cough in somebody's face. It's not cool. If you do, don't listen to us, please. We don't want you. And that's really it. Honestly, everyone, please take care of yourselves. Thank you to our frontline healthcare workers. We love you. You're doing the good work out there. And just remember to be kind, #be kind, #don't be a dick. And that's really it. We hope you had a good time. Hope to see you next week. Have a great weekend and a great week. Bye-bye.